What's up, everybody? This is Shelby with Tux Books and Crime, and it's Crafting Storytime, where I tell you a terrible story and crochet. If you're into true crime and you like to craft along with it, or you just like to listen to true crime, let me be your girl. Hopefully, eventually, someday, each Wednesday, I post a video of me crocheting and telling you a horrible story so we can get traumatized together and make things together. So, I don't know how my audio is going to sound fucking, I don't care. It's a lot of bullshit. And I just found out I'm getting fatter. And I'm not going to cry because that's not your problem. But this used to fit me really well. Now it doesn't. So every time I make progress, I ruin it. Every time. And anyway, I don't want to cry because I know it's not supposed to be that important. It's very important to me. And it's just, it's been really hard. Anywho, this story is crazy. And I mean, murderers always make me mad. But this one, it's just, I guess it's like, when the person's caught, it's their attitude towards the thing, their whole thing, and why. And it's kind of just like, I don't care. You're still in the wrong. So let's jump into it. Our story takes place on Mount Baldy in California, a beautiful, beautiful area about 40 miles outside of Los Angeles. And it's 1998. So there are residents on the mountain, but they're very sparse, so people have a lot of privacy. It's very secluded. And so people are neighborly, but they have so much peace knowing that nobody can really see what they're doing. And people really have to go out of their way to find you. And this is where, in 1998, Judy Geller and her partner, Marcia Johnson, settle. Judy Geller and Marcia Johnson actually meet in rehab. They start off as friends first. And they encourage each other to maintain their sobriety. And because of this accountability, they keep each other on and stay on the straight and narrow. They actually do quite well together. Their relationship does eventually turn romantic and they start to build a life together. Judy becomes a substance abuse counselor and Marcia becomes a computer programmer. And in the late 90s, I think even still now, they make really good money, or, you know, they definitely earn a living. And they start to kind of just travel around in their RV and, you know, going from place to place all up and down California. And in 1998 is when they settle into Mount Baldy. So while they are staying on Mount Baldy, they actually meet a resident there named Jack Irwin. And Jack Irwin is a 71-year-old vet. He is very private, and he is kind of the epitome of simple, minimal, no fuss. He does not overindulge in anything materialistic. He has a beautiful cabin. And that's like where his peace comes from and from the land. And that's it. He was a very solitary individual. And however, you know, he's 71, he's getting up there in age. And the cabin cabin demands a lot of physical exertion in order to care for it. The land itself is treacherous. You know, if you have to go up and down with materials, he has to cut firewood because the house does not have heat. He has to burn firewood. And I mean, just chopping wood itself I'm sure it was hard for him. He's a small man. He's getting up there in age. You get winded faster. You have less strength. I'm sure it was a struggle. And because of these things, he starts to decide that he might want to, you know, sell his cabin and settle somewhere else, somewhere less that doesn't involve as much maintenance, that's easier to manage, or where he can have someone come and maintain the area for him that isn't so far out of reach. And he befriends Marcia and Judy. And they, you know, they get along great. He doesn't seem to care that they're a lesbian couple. And I know that sounds weird, but in 1998, people cared. So he'd like, that wasn't a problem for him at all. And he seemed to just be like a nice man. And again, he was very private, very to himself. But he was nice and he was neighborly. So the only thing that was really like an issue with Jack in the cabin, or like selling his cabin, was he was very, very selective on who he sold it to. He really wanted to be confident that whoever took care of his property that he put so much time and love into was going to respect it and maintain it and take good care of it. So he was kind of passing up offers here and there because he just didn't trust the buyers. But he gets into conversation with Judy and Marcia about it, and they start really building a friendship and a bond. So when the idea of them being potential buyers comes up, Jack considers them more than he's considered any other buyer. He's seen how much that they enjoy the area and how much they respect the land. And he really feels like this is a couple that will actually appreciate all of it and the surroundings and the nature. He really thinks that they're the best fit for this. And he also felt that because Judy and Marcia were just so nice to him, that they would be good neighbors, that they wouldn't be a hassle for people he's lived amongst and befriended over the years. They're not going to cause any grief. So in 1999, he decides to sell to Judy and Marcia. So once the sale goes through, Jack actually moves like down the mountain at the lower level, I guess the base. I think you would call that the base of the mountain. I live in the fucking plains, so I don't know. But I would assume it's a base, you know, if you think of like pyramid and science, base. Anyhow, he moves down there. It's much easier for him. However, he does apparently make a trip up to the cabin daily to check on it, which I'm not gonna lie, I think that would get on my nerves after a while. I'd be like, dude, but you know, I get it. At the same time, I get it. He lived there for a very long time. And for a man who didn't indulge in anything, you know, really saved practically every penny that he ever made, that the cabin is kind of like with what most of his resources ever went to. Like if he ever splurged on anything, it was the cabin. So of course he's far more protective of it and sensitive about it. So he checks on it daily, and it doesn't seem to bother Judy and Marcia very much. They understand, and they thought he was a nice man and, you know, harmless. So they let it go. Now, after a while, it does start to kind of weigh on the ladies a little bit. Again, he's going up there daily, and as time progresses, it doesn't seem like, you know, his visits, maybe he starts to space them out. Instead of coming every day, he's maybe stopping by once a week. That's not happening. He is still there daily, checking in on them and checking on the cabin. So eventually, things kind of come to a head, and a neighbor reports hearing them arguing with Jack. I guess like he started to kind of become a nuisance at that point. And especially because apparently he started to disapprove of maybe some things they had around the house. And he was getting a little too protective over it, almost as if he wanted it to stay the way it was when he lived there and them not necessarily make it their own. And if they are making it their own, he did not agree with some of the things that they were doing with it. And the cabin was still in great shape. So it's not like they were, you know, doing work on it. They weren't renovating. They really weren't. But they were, of course, you know, trying to make it a home. Now, this argument got so heated and definitely ended on a bad note, because Jack actually, after that, he never came back to the cabin. He stopped visiting. So after some time, Marcia and Judy began to get a little concerned because they haven't seen Jack, nor have they heard from him. And the thing is, apparently they are paying him directly for the cabin. It wasn't like financed through a bank. They're paying him and they can't get a hold of him. So they report him missing. And this is when, you know, of course, authorities get involved, because this is a man, again, very simple, definitely has a pattern, has his routines, and him stepping out of all of his routines is very uncharacteristic. And his neighbors are also concerned, because apparently after his last time being seen on the mountain, when the argument occurred, nobody had seen from him or heard from him since. And there was a couple that lived on the mountain that definitely had befriended him. He had befriended mainly the husband, but the wife was like, you know, she wanted to make sure he was okay. She knew he was by himself and he was getting older, so she wanted to make sure he's taking care of himself, that he has what he needs, that he's eating. And she couldn't get a hold of him either, which was strange for her. So they were already growing concerned also. On October 3rd, 1999, Marcia actually reports Jack missing. Nobody knows where he is. And when authorities start to begin to investigate, it's really, really hard to track Jack. Jack doesn't have any credit cards whatsoever. So, you can't track bank activity. He deals he deals completely in cash, especially, you know, he's 71 at this time, which means he was probably born. Yeah, he's born around the Great Depression, if not right after. Sounds like he's born right in the middle of it, though, if I do the math. People who grew up in that time either were born around that time or came up maybe like even in the 30s, they don't trust banks because of what happened. So it makes a lot of sense for him to mainly deal in cash. It definitely does. The other thing is, so, you know, they check Jack's house. They don't find any sign of foul play or that anything, you know, that he was taken or he's been hurt. And when they ask Judy and Marcia, they say that really their relationship had been it was good. They were getting along great. They were very neighborly. They really enjoyed each other's company, and they definitely brought companionship into Jack's life. But after they purchased the cabin from him, he kind of did a 180. And suddenly, you know, he was very demeaning again because he's so protective of this cabin. And he starts to suddenly disagree with their lifestyle when at first he seemed perfectly open and accepting about it. And this is, of course, what led to, like, with these emotions and him constantly coming over. It definitely makes sense as to how all of this came to a head and there was that argument. And because officers cannot find anything, they can't find that Judy and Marcia did anything. They can't find that maybe he, you know, there was an accident on his way home. There is nothing leading to anything and anywhere that Jack can be. That police actually start to believe that maybe he's just out traveling. And this is actually confirmed by Judy and Marcia because they actually told one of the neighbors who was concerned about Jack because they hadn't heard from him either or seen him that he actually went up to Seattle to see the Space Needle, which apparently the neighbor kind of took with a grain of salt. They've known Jack far longer than Judy and Marcia, and it didn't seem very Jack. Jack is a very solitary person. I don't want to say curmudgeon, but he definitely seems to like his peace and like to be by himself. Space Needle is, you know, Seattle's very busy area, busy tourist site that it doesn't sound like something he'd be drawn to because of the crowd. Because they can't find anything pointing to where Jack could be, you know, the case stays open. And summer of 2000, a 911 call comes in and it's Judy and Marcia's cabin has been burglarized. However, when police look into the crime and they do their investigation, they're a little perplexed because there's no sign of forced entry and there's not really any evidence as to what the person was looking for or a motive. If they knew them, they kind of have nothing to go off of. But this act actually makes Judy and Marcia feel targeted. So they kind of leave town for like a month. And while they're gone, you know, they ask one of the neighbors, you know, can you keep an eye on the cabin? Of course, right? Naturally, I think we would all do that. I don't like telling my neighbors that I'm leaving out of town. But that's because I don't know. I don't trust people. I tell my family and that's it. Now, so about a month after the burglary, another 911 call comes in and the cabin is suddenly on fire. And this was a severe fire. I don't think they were able to put it out in time. When you look at, you know, the aftermath, it really destroyed this cabin. I don't even think Marcia and Judy were able to like live in it for a while. I can't remember, but yeah, it was in bad shape. It didn't like burn to the ground, but it definitely wasn't. It was severe. They start looking into what caused the fire. Of course, they have to see how it started, maybe learn from it. At first, they think that maybe it could be from a wildfire. However, they see pretty quickly that is not the case. It started directly at the cabin and they find an accelerant at the house, meaning that this fire was intentional and it was set specifically targeting either the cabin or Marcia and Judy. Now with this act, now Judy and Marcia really feel like they're being targeted. So they just leave all together and move to Alpine. They're done with Balbaldi. They're scared and they just didn't want to deal with it anymore. Now, while all of this is going on, you know, the ladies move to Alpine. Jack's still missing. Again, no developments, nothing. And eventually the case gets looked at again and they start at the cabin with the arson. And when looking around the cabin, they find something that wasn't spotted before. And this was a lockbox that was still intact. And that's because you can buy fireproof lockboxes. I always say I'm going to do that so I can put like, you know, social stuff in there. I don't do it. I'm a Sagittarius. I fucking overpromise everything with no follow through. That's me. Consistently inconsistent. That's me. I'm still upset with myself. Sorry. So, but this lockbox brings, you know, some questions and they go ahead and look at it and they look into it and see what the hell's in there. And in there, they find a very, very, very interesting document. They find documentation of a trust fund that had been set up and it has Judy and Marcia listed as the beneficiaries. So along with this legal document, they also find power of attorney documents. And these documents actually list both Judy and Marcia as Jack's power of attorney. And with this, suddenly this whole missing person issue goes into a whole other direction. And now we definitely have something to really look into and something to go off of as to what happened to Jack. And especially when you think about the fact that this power of attorney grants Marcia and Judy access to all of Jack's finances. And remember, Jack was a very frugal, simple man who literally saved constantly. So when you live that minimal and you don't want really anything because you're not materialistic, you just want to be simple and enjoy your time to yourself, you save a lot pretty quickly. And that's how it was with Jack. So Marcia and Judy having access to his finances is definitely concerning. So with this, officers decide to start canvassing the mountain and speaking to neighbors who may have known Jack and see if they can find any more information. And information they do find. So one close friend of Jack's that also lives on the mountain comes forward and says that Jack had confided in him that Marcia and Judy had stopped paying him. As you see, when they bought the cabin from Jack, they didn't finance through a bank. They were to be paying Jack directly. The friend then goes on to tell investigators that Jack had made an agreement with Judy and Marcia that they were to pay him $582 a month for 10 years, and then he would turn the title over to them. But apparently, they had stopped paying him, which goes back to the argument. You get a little bit more insight as to what really they're arguing about, more than likely. Dude wants his money. Now, I was going to say like $582 a month ain't shit. And then I think I'm like, oh, fuck, it's the year 2000. Never mind. I mean, I feel like that's still pretty inexpensive for the year 2000, but I could be wrong. I think apartments like were, no, never mind. Yeah, that's cheap. Especially for California. Jesus Christ. So, like, if this doesn't make things worse about the fact that they're clearly taking advantage of this old man. So Marcia and Judy only made two payments. It's not even that they were paying for like 6 months or anything and went through a hardship. No, these bitches just decided like, well, fuck Jack and just stop paying him. So then they start looking into Judy and Marcia. And they learned that they had recently declared bankruptcy. It's like, okay, so maybe they couldn't pay the mortgage, right? Or, you know, make that payment to Jack. Until they learned that Judy and Marcia just bought a big ass RV. So, uh-oh, indeed. But with this, they start diving into Jack's financial records. Again, there's no activity of him spending, but they can see where as soon as Marcia got the power of attorney, she starts taking money left and fucking right out of Jack's account. This accumulating to about $250,000. That is how much disappeared from Jack's account. And remember, this all happened in like early 90s. So these women blew $250,000 in about a year, which is fucking mind-blowing. Because again, early 2000s, it is not the way it is now. The shit was, you could go a long way with $250,000 back then. That's fucking crazy. So with this, the cops go ahead and start questioning Judy and Marcia because they want to see how they explain these transactions. Because so when you're a power of attorney for someone, when you use that person's money, it needs to benefit the beneficiary. It's supposed to benefit him. If they have power of attorney over Jack, everything is supposed to be in the benefit of Jack, which is why it usually comes in with the elderly because of hospice care, hospital bills, everything. It's so they can withdraw the money to take care of them, not yourselves. But that is definitely how it's starting to look with Marcia and Judy. So they want to see what they can, they want to see if they can explain any of it, if not all of it. So one thing they ask is about Marcia purchasing some very expensive computer equipment. And her response is like, oh, well, me and Jack, we're going to start a business together. Again, a man who seemed to really enjoy his time to himself, his peace and his freedom. Does not sound like someone who wants to run a business, do a startup business because of how much, I mean, the startup is what takes the most time and effort. So it just, again, doesn't sound like something he'd be interested in. Another thing they question her on is, what was the Corvette for? Yeah, a Corvette. And her response to this is that the Corvette was purchased to take Jack back and, you know, to and from his doctor's appointments. Yeah, because that's what makes me think of a mountain. Like when I think of like a car in a mountain, I don't think of anything with four-wheel drive or anything. No, I think of a fucking Corvette. And when I think of something for comfort for an older man who, like, you know, an older man who's getting up there in age, I think of a two-seater that is fucking low that probably wouldn't be the easiest thing for him to get in and out of because of how low they are. You know, they hug the road, turn tighter and shit. So asinine fucking explanation. And not even that. Again, Jack, simple, Jack probably would have wanted a used car because didn't need fucking fancy shit. He just needs to get there and get back. Doesn't fucking care that it's nice or not. So again, bullshit excuse. Bad liars. I heard something on Love After Lockup of all things and I really liked it. That no man has ever lived long enough to be a successful liar. And ain't that the fucking truth? It bites you in the ass every fucking time. And really, as they're asking Judy and Marsha more and more, because they want to see if any of these transactions are purposeful transactions for Jack. But Judy and Marsha, as far as they're concerned, they don't see what they did wrong because, according to them, they're the beneficiaries on the trustees. Well, they're the beneficiaries of the trust. Technically, to them, they don't have to provide an explanation. They don't have to, it doesn't necessarily, The women maintain this idea that because they're also beneficiaries on the trust, they don't, that they did nothing wrong. Everything they spent, all of the $250,000, they were allowed to touch, basically. That's how they're acting. And the sad part is the only person who could really confirm this for them and, get this all squared away as quickly as possible would be Jack. So officers know they need to find Jack. So with this, because at this point, they're very concerned of his, how he is, the state they're going to find him in if they do find him. Of course, they don't have enough to arrest Judy and Marsha, but they keep in regular contact with them. They tap their phones and keep an eye on them. Marsha goes and retains an attorney. I wonder who paid for that. But she retains an attorney and, refuses to talk, sticks to her story. And so investigators decide to, push the envelope a little bit and maybe start the fire burning under their ass. And they start charging them with crimes, with felonies, all of which nothing of it has to do with a homicide, all for misappropriating funds. They're misusing Jack's money and they can prove it because of the documentation that they have. So when the women find out that they're being charged with a crime, well, first they tell Marsha. Marsha's at home and she immediately calls Judy. And she, they don't incriminate themselves. They don't say anything telling or anything, obvious. They still stay to mum's the word. But she tells Judy, that, hey, I'm being charged with a crime. And obviously, you put two and two together. That means Judy's about to be charged. She's going to get it too. And the thing is Judy actually works in a prison at this time, which when they come for her to serve her is going to be mortifying. And that's exactly what happens. They serve Judy at work and they seize her vehicle, which I would die. That actually happened to one dumbass I work with who was fucking stealing. They arrested him at work. Fucking idiot. And this, after the car being seized, this is really amping up for them. And Judy, you can tell, is panicking. Marsha's panicking. The girls are freaking out. And their phone calls back and forth are starting to get more and more frantic. And you can tell they're freaking out. You can tell they're very anxious. It's very telling because they don't sound confused. They sound scared. Like they know. So then Marsha cracks first. And when I say she cracks, she didn't turn herself in. Nothing like that. She actually calls her relative. I believe she calls her aunt. Her aunt picks up the phone. She's all in tears. And she just, it all comes out. She says verbatim, "It's all over. I'm going to turn myself in for killing Jack." So with that, they have their confession and they arrest her before. She says she's going to turn herself in. How many times have people said they're going to turn themselves in and then they fucking flee? So to be sure that doesn't happen, they just arrest her before she can even get the idea to really do it. Once Marsha is in custody, they finally get her side of the story and how everything happened. So according to Marsha, Judy was out of town one weekend and Jack showed up. He expressed his regret for selling the cabin to the two ladies because he doesn't feel that they're taking care of it. But mainly because they don't fucking pay him. They're taking advantage of him. And he regrets that this ever came into fruition. And he's mad. So they start arguing, they're bickering back and forth. And at one point, Jack just walks away. I'm sure he just realized, he's not going to get anywhere with this woman. She's not going to pay him. She doesn't feel bad for not paying him. She probably is coming up with excuses left and right out of her ass. So he just knows it's just not going to get anywhere with her. And then, according to Marsha, while Jack has his back turned to her and he's walking away, in her words, she just wanted to shut him up. Yeah, because, he wanted his money. How terrible of him. But yeah, she just wanted to shut him up is what she said. And with that, she shoots him. I think the sadder part is the gun she uses to shoot him is a gun that Jack gave her because he really liked her company and Judy's company. He thought they were very nice women. And it turns out they just fucking conned him, basically. It was all manipulation. So after she shoots Jack, you know, he dies. And then she's basically, she's got to do something with the body. She needs to get rid of it. So she gets a chainsaw. Because that's your next thought. I guess that's dedication, right? I don't fucking know. That's not where my fucking thought would go. My thought would be like, ah, fuck. But nope, not her. She goes and gets a chainsaw and she gets to work dismembering this poor old man. At one point during this whole interview, she even tells the investigators that she didn't know how heavy a head was, that it was very heavy, which I'm sure was just such a grueling detail for them. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, because when you're a homicide investigator, you see some horrible shit. They might not already know. They might already know that, but you don't want to be reminded. You don't want to think about that shit. And I'm sure it's just very haunting to hear that from someone else. It's terrible. So once she, you know, was done with the chainsaw and dismembering him, she then put pieces of him in plastic containers and in her truck, which is the vehicle that they seized from Judy. It was a Ford Expedition. To add insult to injury, it's also a truck that they bought using Jack's money because they bought more than one vehicle, a fucking RV, Corvette, and a Ford Expedition. Just like, you know, fucking ridiculous. Just excess. That's all that shit is. She takes the Ford Expedition into the mountains and she just drops off, you know, containers in different areas on the mountain. They're all separate. And unfortunately, no piece of Jack has ever been found. And I'm sure that's due to the wildlife. This also leads to Marcia confessing that she staged the burglary that happened at the cabin, which makes sense because of the no signs of forced entry, which is why they were so confused. What was the intent here? And you realize the intent was not thought out well enough, that's for sure. And she also admits to the one starting the fire. And she was doing this to make it seem that her and Judy were being targeted for their lifestyle and being lesbian lovers, which it's fucking California, lady. Like, I don't know. I'm sure there's fucking racist and, you know, bigots and shit over there too, but I don't know. I know at one point they were all flocking over there because they could be themselves. So it didn't make any sense. And what a shitty thing to do just for like the rest of the community. This idea of setting up this whole thing to make it seem like you and your girlfriend or your wife, well, I guess life partner are targeted and the victims in this situation is really purely disgusting. I can't speak for the community. I'm straight, but I just feel like it would be an insult. Like, how dare you use us as a crutch because you did something fucked up and don't want to be held accountable for it. Keep us out of your shit. That's how I would feel. And I like, really, how dare you act like people who have actually been targeted? Like, that's just shitty. It really is shitty. And I'm really glad that nobody was really buying it. And then she also says that it was all her. Judy was out of town and Judy has no idea that she killed Jack, that she had none. But it didn't make 100% sense that Judy didn't know. And regardless if she knew or not, Judy was spending his money just as much as Marcia. So with this confession, Marcia is charged with murder, of course, but she's also charged with elder abuse, arson, grand theft, and some other things. You know, there's quite a list. And Judy, you know, Miss Innocent, is not innocent. Again, even if she didn't know that Jack was dead, this woman had no problem assisting in the manipulation and basically stealing the cabin out from under him and then taking his money. So she might not have pulled the trigger, but she's just as guilty. She really is. And Judy actually admits to, yes, knowing that she was using Jack's money, because it would be really stupid to say you didn't, because how the fuck are you going to go from, you know, not having all this crazy shit to being able to buy all this crazy shit? You know, they would have done it before. So that doesn't make any sense. She knew. And she actually she takes a plea deal and she actually testifies against Marcia. So she only gets 180 days in prison, which I think is such fucking crap, but okay. And she's ordered to pay $150,000 in restitution. Marcia is sentenced to life in prison. And the sad part is, like, again, Jack's remains were never found anywhere on the mountain. And it's unknown whether he had any family, any kids. But he had neighbors who genuinely cared about him. So I'm sure this was really hard to hear from them or hear about him. So it really is. It's just shitty behavior, really. And it's just gross. An old man who's been to fucking war and survived a war, penny pinched so he could really enjoy his retirement and just enjoy the land and his cabin, only to have women with this horrible intent come upon you and just take it and ruin it. Very sad. But that is the murder of Jack Irwin. I mean, really, what can we learn from this? And the only takeaway I can really think of is people are always going to show you what they want you to see. And you have to really, really focus and get to know someone to figure out who they really are from when they slip up. Now, I don't know if Judy and Marcia ever did slip up, but anybody is capable of being a wolf in sheep's clothing. So I don't know. We just got to be cautious. And if your gut feeling's telling you this person is shady and might cause you some grief, or if not worse, I'd go with my gut first and worry about it later. Let me just finish this. But I thank you for joining me. I'm making a dress for my toddler. Forgot to mention it. It's my third fucking attempt at it. Didn't like the way the color pulled the first time. Ran out of yarn the second time. So this is our third go. But I thank you for joining me. Please, you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. Mainly on TikTok, though, and Facebook. I'm Shelby with Hooks, Books, and Crime, and I'll catch you on the next one. Okay, bye.